Eagles win last night. Now, that was an interesting game last night. I watched it again today. And they've won four games in a row. That is, of course, the Toronto Argonauts, and they are full value for those victories. They have outscored their opposition 230 to 174. They have played that way. When you consider their defense is third in the league, only behind Saskatchewan and British Columbia, the BC Lions. That's pretty good because those are two pretty good defenses, and their defense is better than Calgary. Now, the rest of the league, really, you've got four teams that are rolling. You've got Saskatchewan at 6-1, Calgary at 5-2, BC identically at 5-2, and the Argos at 5-2. Now, the rest, well, put it this way. Between the other four teams, they have seven wins. And almost half of those are by Hamilton. So, what does that tell you? It tells you there's some disparity in the league right now. But Hamilton has won two games in a row. And it is my belief that they will straighten things out. I still am not sure that Henry Burris is the quarterback for Hamilton. He's a great guy, but I'm not sure he's the guy. But he has been proving me wrong the past couple of weeks. And good for that, because he's a likable guy and there's nothing wrong with him succeeding. Only a prediction on my part, nothing personal. With Montreal, a different story in the offing. They tried a new quarterback this week. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. It's going to be tough for Montreal. Let's be honest, all right? I mean, it's going to be tough for them this year. You know, they haven't really looked like a team able to win. And even though, in their last game, they made it close. 24-21 is pretty good. But still, winning is everything. And just as we saw yesterday against Edmonton here in Toronto at the Rogers Centre, you can play well in a game, but you got to play well enough to win. And Edmonton didn't do that. But if I were an Edmonton fan, I'd have to say that I saw some bright, shiny lights that shone brightly. First of all, a lot of pro-line people fainted at the end of the game because Edmonton made it within three, and the batters were really upset. The only reason why people stayed in their seats, and I think most of them were playing pro-line. And, well, good for them. They deserve to lose. No, that's what you get for betting against Edmonton. I happen to think that that's going to be the best team in the second half. Not necessarily, you know, finishing first overall and all that kind of stuff, but I do believe that they will make the most improvement in the second half of the season, which we are quickly approaching. The season has really moved quickly, and, well, it's important, I guess, that around this part of the year you start developing what your team's going to be like, and also hope that your team starts to play in a manner that is conducive to winning. Really setting the table, because this isn't when you have dinner. This is when you set the table. This is when you order the food. This is when you start checking to make sure that, you know, everything is the way it should be so that you're ready when the big meal's ready. And, yeah, that big meal is only half a season away. And I'll include the last two or three games of the season where you get to establish your team's confidence, which means winning at the end of the year. So we're closely coming to that point in the season. Now, the Montreal Alouettes are my biggest concern, because we all knew that they were going to have difficulty this year, but none of us believed that it would be a quarterback, and that seems to be the case. In Hamilton, the quarterback situation was questionable until two games ago, and Henry Burris answered the bell and proved that he is the quarterback in Hamilton, and more power to him. In Saskatchewan, the quarterback issue is a little different. Darian Durant is speaking humbly of the less than stellar way he's been playing. Now, in Saskatchewan, they consider that a reason to be excited and motivated, which means the team is really written. I don't know. Sometimes I think in Saskatchewan, any reason and anything that's mentioned is a reason for them to win. Saskatchewan, more than any other franchise, is 100% behind their team. And sometimes I think they're not just behind their team, they're in front of their team. And they need to let their team move ahead of them and lead them in whatever hopes and aspirations they have. Saskatchewan has made the most daring and most incredible moves of the season. I always joke about the fact that, are they under the cap, really? Are they really under the cap? Well, one can only surmise that they are under the cap, because the league hasn't said anything. And the league would say if they were over the cap, right? I mean, they wouldn't, you know, turn the other cheek a little bit, or the eye, because the game's in Saskatchewan this year, would they? No, I don't think so. I don't think they'd do that. So, yeah, so the CFL looks really interesting. And to talk about yesterday's game, I have to tell you, it's hard to follow the game when you're there live. There are a lot of distractions. Some of them are welcome, some not so much. So, you know, you really don't get to see the game the way you'd like. So that's why you have to go home and you have to watch it again, especially if you're a fervent fan with a group of fervent fans who are emotionally wound up to the degree where they're not really, it almost seems like watching the game is secondary. But it isn't. And one thing I gleaned live was Ricky Ray. The guy's just amazing. He's a machine. Come on, let's admit it. Player of the year this year? What do you think? Is that me speaking like an Argo fan? Well, as far as the games are concerned, the Bombers lost to Hamilton 37-18. Again, Henry Burris showing that, you know, he can do it. Saskatchewan at home had a tough time against the Owls, and they won 24-21. The BC Lions beat the Stampeders after Stampeders had a great game last week and defeated the Saskatchewan Roughriders, going to show that any team can beat any other team that's really good, and BC is a really good team, and they proved it this week by beating Calgary, another really good team. The surprise of the week has to be that the Argos squeaked. Well, maybe they didn't really squeak. It looked more like a squeak because of the last play of the game. It was 36-33, Argos over Edmonton. And Edmonton is my pick for the second half. I've said it, and I'll keep repeating it. I really do believe that that's the team to look out for in the second half. And they will be a playoff spoiler. They will be a team that spoils some teams' aspirations in the playoffs, and at the very least, seedings. And that's the important thing for them this year, to establish that they can be a factor. And one thing they proved to us at the Rogers Centre last night, and for those that watched on TSN as well, this is a team that doesn't give up. And that's a good first step for a young team, to not give up. And they didn't, and they kept it close. And, yeah, their record still is one win and seven losses. But really, what does that really mean? It just means that in a lot of cases that a small little improvement here and there could turn that 1-7 to 4-4. It really could. And you really have to enjoy the fact that the Edmonton Eskimos are on the move. And they do look good even in their losses. They look good in their loss to Hamilton. They look good in their loss to Toronto. And they've looked good in a couple of other losses as well. Now, you know, when you're that team in that position with that much youth, you can look good when you're losing. Now, if you're the Argonauts, you can't look good losing. It's impossible, as it is for BC, Saskatchewan, and of course the Calgary Stampeders. Now, Montreal's another story, and they probably won't look good winning the way things are going. They could win a game, and I'm sure people will say, well, you know. And that basically is what I think about the teams as far as them playing this week and where they sit so far this week. We talked about the standings. We talked about the games this week. We should now have an opportunity to, let's see now, what we got here. Oh, a phone call. Hello?
Hey, Frank, how you doing?
Hey, handsome, how you doing?
Doing good, sir.
So, what's the story? Did you see the game last night? Why don't we start with the Argo game? What did you think of that last night?
That was a great game. I guess Mike Riley really proved a lot of people wrong. That was was a great performance he had out there.
He didn't even hook slide. You're right, Mike. He really did look good out there. And I'll tell you something. In the stadium, he looked in control. After each successful play, the team was fired up. And the Eskimos really did play well. And the score was pretty indicative of how they played against the Argonauts last night. I don't think it was, any kind of compliment to them, the score.
Yeah, absolutely. But, hey, you know, at the end of the day, a win's a win, right?
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, I don't think we can argue the point that for the Argos, they have to win. For Edmonton, they have to start getting their game together because they're so young. And I think both of them won last night in that regard.
Yep.
So the other games, how'd you feel about the other games? I mean, you look at Calgary after beating Saskatchewan, and they go into BC and lose. A close one, but they lose. Was that a surprise to you?
Yeah, it was really. But in a way, I kind of saw it coming just because, you know, I could imagine the Riders just, you know, imagine looking at the film the prior week of Montreal against Toronto, you know, would have been human nature to think, oh, these guys are totally a mess. And, you know, they thought they probably were just going to walk all over them. But that Montreal defense is amazing. They were really fantastic. I mean, the way they kept mixing up things and just they just made Durant's day an absolute nightmare. So that was pretty impressive.
Well, they definitely created or inspired some humbleness in Darian Durant.
Yeah, hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I was just adding to what you said. Darian Durant knows that, or at least is honest enough, if that's what we can say, to know and to believe that he needs to pick up his game for his team to play better.
Yeah, you know, that was a game that was, I appreciate Durant for not throwing his offensive line under the bus, but they really, that was that in the Calgary game, the offensive line's play has really dropped off significantly from where they were, you know, the first couple games of the year where they look like the best line in the league. And, you know, there's no quarterback, whether it's CFL, NFL, you could have Tom Brady and Peyton Manning back there. If you can't protect your quarterback and he's constantly feeling pressure every single, you know, every like within a second of him snapping the ball, you know, there's no quarterback that can operate in that. And that's just a credit to Noel Thorpe and the Montreal's coaching staff. Just for, if you notice, they would always disguise their coverages and, you know, they would pretend like they're going to play, you know, they were going to drop back in coverage, and then they would send the blitz, or they would, you know, fake the blitz and drop back, and they just, the offensive line just didn't know what to expect, and that's why you saw so many times guys just coming free up the middle or on the side, because you could just tell they were totally confused just from, you know, what's coming in which direction. So that was just a credit to a great game plan by Montreal. But it's a shame with Cavillo. I just hope that's not his last game we see of him, but I don't know.
Well, the replacement threw two interceptions, so we know that it won't be because the replacement's going to be pushing him to the sidelines.
Yeah. I know, man. But I don't know. Was there anything today? Did they say anything as far as his status or?
Nope. Not that I noticed. They haven't, they talked more about the quarterback that came in for him. They suspect that he might have a concussion.
Okay.
So at this point, Josh Kneeswander is the guy. I mean.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah.
You know, apparently he will be the guy. But you know what? In situations like this, I truly believe that backups can make some hay because of the confidence of the opposition coming in. Now, it really is going to be a testament to how quickly the new offensive management of the Owls kicks it into gear. Obviously, their defense, as you've well noted, has kicked into gear, and their defense is playing very well. If the offense could just meet them part of the way, you know, the Owls can start being respectable again, even with Kneeswander.
Yeah, no, I mean, and the thing there, too, is they have a guy in Tanner Marsh who's behind him who they're really high on, and not to mention, obviously, Troy Smith, the former Heisman Trophy winner that they brought in. But I think... I don't know. I think we're probably going to see, you know, Tanner Marsh in at some point soon, and I wouldn't be surprised by the end of the year if Troy Smith's not playing. That's assuming that, you know, Cavillo's done for the year or will be out for a long time. But I don't know. I mean, Montreal, that whole situation, this season is totally a wash for them. I think they're just honestly looking forward to just getting it done, and then I expect Jim Popp to do a total overhaul on the offense this offseason. I'd imagine... You know, they might think about letting Jamel Richardson go, probably Arlen Bruce. You know, I mean, I like Jamel Richardson, but it seems like his best days might be behind him. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
To put it bluntly, you can paint a very wide brush in Montreal. And unfortunately, that wide brush will also cover innocent victims. Is Jamel Richardson one of those innocent victims? I'm not quite sure. I think the jury's out. He has not shown much, but, I mean, you know, you talked about the offensive line. You talk about Calvillo. And let's face it, if the offensive line isn't protecting Calvillo and Calvillo isn't getting time to toss, I mean, nobody can catch the ball in a vacuum. There have to be catchable passes made. And there haven't been many of those, Mike, this year for Montreal.
Yeah. But, hey, you know, go ahead.
No. And I was saying that's a problem.
Yeah, but the great thing is, I guess, from an Argos perspective, is it looks like Hamilton's just going to, you know, run away with the number 2 seed, which bodes well for the East Final as far as attendance goes. I mean, you know, I'm sure Chris Rudge and David Bailey are going to be happy to see the Ticats show up, so... From an Argo perspective, I think all is well as far as how the East is concerned.
Well, I talked about the standings before you came in, and you know, right now it looks like Hamilton, like you say, and it's hard to the way things stand right now. But let's not throw Montreal under the bus just yet, because they did play well against Saskatchewan, you know, the best team in the league right now. So you know that means something. The best hope for the Argos, if you're an Argo fan, is that Hamilton and Montreal, if they finish second and third and Winnipeg finishes out and the Argos finish first, it would be really nice if there was a real competitive battle between those two teams. Because the last thing you want is for Hamilton to go in with an easy game against Montreal or Winnipeg, depending on what happens there, and then meet Toronto in the Eastern Final, because that could be a problem. You don't want that. I wouldn't want that. That worries me. Because the layoff of the team that finishes first, the handicap that creates, and an easy road to that game for the second or third seed, you know, sets up a pretty even match. And you know, football on the field when you're in possession of the ball is 2 and out, but in the playoffs it's 1 and out. So you know. It's pretty dangerous stuff. I mean, the Argos won the Grey Cup last year based on a a reception that didn't happen in the end zone, and they went on to win the Grey Cup. So, you know, nobody more than Argo fans understands the fine line between winning the Grey Cup and not making it there. It's a very fine line. But that's what makes the game interesting.
Absolutely. But the, I mean, you know, from a business standpoint, I know, you know, Chris Rudge and them, they probably desperately want that, you know, that number one seed, just because, you know, if the Argos end up in the East Final, or let's just say it's Montreal or Hamilton, there's a good chance they're going to get, you know, over 30,000 right now, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, no, we'll see. You know, I understand the financial concerns that you're pointing towards. Are the Argos focused? Yeah, probably upper management, that's their focus. But I think from Jim Barker down, they're more focused on winning day-to-day. And following Milanovic as much as I have, he's a serious guy, and he has his eye on the prize, and he's a great leader. And I think that is not a concern for the Argos at this time as far as the team is concerned.
Yeah,
but you're
yeah,
right
you're
to
right.
bring it up.
Yeah, yeah. Not to mention, speaking of Milanovic, the guy has some fantastic pregame speeches. I gotta give it to him. I don't know if do you see those on the TSN's website? You ever check those out?
No, I haven't. I haven't. I've seen a couple of his.
Okay.
And yes, he's a great motivator. Tell us a bit about him. Review him for us.
Yeah, no, the thing that I think he picked up, what I noticed is because coming from Montreal, obviously he brought the, you know, the sense of discipline, the whole win-the-day mentality, and obviously the offensive system. But the thing that I think he noticed where Mark Trestman came up short was really commanding the locker room and giving a strong, you know, pregame speech and giving a good point that the guys will definitely respond to. And I think he really noticed that Mark didn't do a great job of that, so it looks like to me like he really put emphasis on making sure he does a good job of it. And I mean, he always comes out like the best speech I ever heard him do was after the East Final last year in Montreal, and you can see this on the Argonauts website. But anyways, he was just like telling the guys, you know, as the waters get deep, and you know we're close to the edge, when you feel like you can't go anymore, you know, have another stroke, or when you think you can't watch any more film, you know, keep watching it. Or if you, you know, you can't study your playbook anymore, turn to another page. And you could just see, like, all the guys, every eye in the locker room was just locked in. And you could just see that all the guys were just totally, that message totally, you know, clicked for them. So, because I've seen other coaches like Tim Burke. When Tim Burke does a speech, it's like no one in the room pays attention. None of the guys, it's irrelevant, you know, like no one, like, it's just depressing, really, you know, and it's just such
Why are you picking on me?
Yeah, you know, I just, unbelievable. But, you know, the Argos, I mean, you got to give Barker credit. He really hit it out the park with the coaching staff. I mean, with him and you know. And
they have They have a history. They have a history going back to Calgary. This is a group of guys that know each other really well, and it kind of interesting. You know, I mean, I don't know how many times have you seen in the management tree where the defensive coordinator is the assistant GM.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's.
I mean,
that's
weird.
A credit to him, right? Yeah, but that's just
for
really
sure.
Smart, though, you know.
And it's a credit, and it's a credit to the whole team, because Milanovic doesn't seem to faze him.
Right.
You know, he's got his turf. It's kind of funny, though, isn't it? But what it is obviously these are three guys that really trust each other. And there's, you know, Barker spends a lot of time on the field. How many GMs spend a lot of time on the field in practice?
Yeah, that's true.
You know? And how many of them would do it and not and create a problem in the dressing room? You know, because to me, the last thing you want to see if you're a coach is the GM walking around. That's a little too close to the players for my liking. But it just goes to show that the GM, the coach, and the defensive coordinator are on the same page. There's no doubt about it. And they're not afraid to meet it head on. You know, it's a pretty honest group of guys. Very admirable, really. I enjoy being around them and watching them. They're businesslike. I mean, I can't see a coach more than Milanovic that should be wearing a suit and tie. The guy is businesslike all the time. Now, he has a fun side. Like, when he gets out of his car and you see him in the parking lot, he'll say, hello, hey, how you doing, and all that, and he's all relaxed. It's like when he puts that whistle around his neck, it's all over. You know, he's in business mode. Yeah, the Argos are very fortunate. We Argo fans are very lucky to have a great organization put together with a management team for the football. We're getting to see some great football. We're getting to see a great team concept. We're getting to see a team that even when, I mean, seriously, devastating injuries. How much more devastating do you want than their running back, their fullback, their Grey Cup MVP fullback going down, their quarterback going down, and the team hasn't missed a step? Very fortunate.
Now, how about the fact that they're in the Eastern Division? I mean, that's, could you imagine? I mean, look at the West. The West looks like an absolute dogfight. I mean, Edmonton's the worst team, and if they were in the East, I mean, honestly, wouldn't they be? I think they'd be the second best team in the East.
It would be. I'm inclined to agree that them and Hamilton would be a dogfight at this point. And as I said, going down the road, I haven't looked at the schedule down the road, but if Edmonton plays a lot of Western teams in the back end, the back half of the season, they're going to really kick some ass, because there's going to be some unhappy teams playing them, and it's going to create some real interest out there in the West. Now, if they play a lot of Eastern teams in the back half, you know, the crossover situation may still exist, because right now, Edmonton's only one game out of crossing over. So,
but how does that work necessarily? Is it like, don't you have to finish ahead? Like, if it's a tie, doesn't the Eastern team automatically?
I believe you're right. You know what? You got me over a barrel on that one. I'm not sure about the tie, but it makes sense. What you're saying makes sense. But let's remember, we're talking about Montreal's at 2-5, Edmonton's at 1-6. That's not a safety net that Montreal has.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And Edmonton crossing over this year, I'm telling you, I believe this real down deep, they're going to be a bigger problem this year against the Eastern team than they were last year against Toronto. And this is, again, my Argo friends aren't going to like me saying this, but, you know, all the stars aligned for the Argonauts. Don't forget, the quarterback went down in the playoff game. You know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm not saying, Argo fans, stop panicking. I'm not saying that Edmonton, if the quarterback hadn't gotten hurt, would have beat the Argos. That is not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is they would have put up a bit of a better fight, no? Don't you think?
Yeah, that's true.
You know? So, yeah, the game, football is all about preparation meeting opportunity. And we never know where the opportunity will come. And for the Argos, it came gloriously last year, game after game, after having a real tough two-thirds of the poll, the final turn, if you will. They got Toronto got a little lucky, and as an Argo fan, I can say that in all honesty. You know, they took care of an opportunity and they took advantage, and that is what Milanovic preaches. He preaches, guys, you gotta bust your ass, because you want to make sure that one little extra push that you can give may mean the difference between winning a Grey Cup and not making it there. And he was right, and I saw that speech that you're talking about, where basically he said that when you get tired, forget you're tired, take another step. You know, a great speech. I totally agree with you. He has some great speeches. Do you wanna discuss the schedule coming up?
Yeah. Did you already talk about BC Calgary or?
No. I haven't talked about BC Calgary. But what we can do is we'll take a short break. We'll come back.
Okay.
Let me play some commercials here, and we'll move on from there. Well, we got some, let's say hello to another caller calling on their cell phone. Hello.
Hey, Frank, how you doing tonight?
Good, how you doing?
Not too bad. It's Aaron from Toronto.
Aaron, how you doing?
Not bad. Argo lifer in the house. I want to get your thoughts on our kicker. We've got Prefontaine back, but we've got Swayze Waters that's looking to come back from the injury soon. Do we go back to Swayze as a young guy, or do we keep Noel in, given he's been consistent?
What did we do last year? Didn't we have them splitting the workload?
Yeah, for a bit, but Noel was actually hurt early in the season, and he was released.
Yeah, no, I get that. They'll probably wean. I spoke to Swayze last night. And he's on an eight game injury hiatus, if you will. So he's coming back soon. Yeah, he's coming back soon, Aaron. And by the way, how are the babies?
They're doing pretty well. Both asleep.
They weren't asleep last night.
No, but they both had fun.
I know they did, except for when I talked to them, they started crying.
Frank, it's just because it's too much CFL information at one time.
I hear you, buddy. Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, so what I will say is that Swayze will start the kicking again, and I think Swayze will be the first one to tell you that he didn't have a good start to his season. A lot of it was due to the fact that he was having a problem, which just got worse.
Yeah. So you do see the foresee of him to close out the season, though? Or do you see them splitting the load?
Absolutely. And you know, yesterday, as you saw in that game, of all the things for Pre to do, he hit the goalpost.
It was a beautiful shot.
If you're going to screw up, you know, go big. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't even get a point out of that one. You know what I'm saying?
It was a comedy of errors on that play, but, you know, it worked out for us in the end. So,
well, Aaron, hang on a second. We're going to go to a break and say hi to Mike.
No.
Mike, this is Aaron. Aaron's an Argo lifer. Spent time with him last night. He brings his kids to the games as well. And when I say children, I'm talking he brings the troops. So, yeah, and daughters at that. They were having a lot of fun down at the bottom of the stairs with the cheerleaders, huh?
They do, and I'll be quite honest, you know, shout out to the junior cheer program with the Argos. It's an absolutely fantastic opportunity to give these girls some good role models. I mean, these girls are in shape, they're educated, and they're out there having fun. You know, what better role models?
That's the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing. They're out there having fun, you know? Anytime you can do some physical exercise and be motivated to do it, it's got to be a good day.
It is, yeah.
Okay, Aaron.
You know, arriving home.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No,
go to your sponsors.
Arriving home?
Yeah, we arrived home last night around midnight, and my daughter still had a smile on her face. Yeah.
Was she asleep while she was smiling?
Not at all. She walked all the way from the subway station.
Good Lord. Well, listen, congrats on that. Okay, we'll be back right after
Thank
this.
You. Perfect.
Travis Lule.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I love this guy.
He's real.
You know you like him.
Loves the outdoors.
He's out there, all out, every game.
You gotta like that.
Look at him.
Always looking to land the big catch.
He's after it.
Articulate.
He's a winner.
Champion.
He's got a great cup.
He's the real deal.
Yeah, you gotta love this guy.
CFL on TSN. You need to see these guys play.
Don't forget, Mike Richards in the morning, TSN 1050.
1, 2, 3.
We're the Argo cheerleaders,
and you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
We're the Argo cheerleaders,
and you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
Yay!
Go Frank! Go Frank!
Go Frank!
Go Frank!
There you go, Frank.
There you go.
Thank you.
That's Jessica. She should be really happy about that commercial. She did a great job, I got to tell you. She's one of the captains of the Argo cheerleaders. Chad Owens.
CO2. Chad Owens. Favorite player ever. He's from Hawaii, playing in the Great White North.
He's not just good. He's real good.
He's into MMA.
From the gridiron to the octagon. He's got game. This is his game.
He's the total passion.
He's got the hard one.
He's got a great cup. He's a family man. Team player.
Dedication to the match. True blue through and through. I love watching this guy.
He's a highlight waiting to happen.
CFL on TSN. You need to see these guys play.
Don't forget, Mike Richards, TSN 1050, every morning. Okay, that's just me having some fun. Now, Patrick Watkins disappeared from the team for a little while. He finally came back. That was great. And I had a chance to talk to him, and this is how it went.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it was a good starting block for me. I know I got a lot of work to do, and I'm not willing to like step down. I'm only gonna go harder.
So now I saw you out there. You were flying pretty good. You know, there's a couple of moves. I wanted to have Inman in here with you. No worries. Wanted to have Inman in here with us so we could have a talk. he seemed to be the guy that missed you most. And what I wanted to talk about is not. I mean, this is probably a real quick question, but. They release the players. You know, you become like a family. You're a bunch of friends. When you look at the cut list, you don't necessarily just look for your name, do you?
No, I do not. And of course, you look for people that you get along with, that you have learned to build chemistry with over the last year. I mean, you know, it's a nasty part of the business, but I mean, you play long enough, it's gonna happen to everybody. It happened to me before, and I didn't stop there. You know, I keep the head towards the sky, and you just continue to believe in yourself and what you and your cause. So. I mean, you can't let it get you down, no matter what position you're in.
How do you not? I mean, the easy question is, how do you not let it get you down when you're cut? But how do you not let? Sometimes I'm under the impression that the stuff you have even less control over might bother you a little more. How do you get over the fact that a friend gets cut that you've known for a while?
I mean, like I said, you try not to dwell on the negative parts of anything, whether it's just life in general, football. Relationship problems, marital status, anything. So you try not to dwell on negative. Yeah, you allow to, go over it. But once you thought about it, you got to move on to what's positive. The positive part is, I'm here and I still have a great relationship with a lot of guys that are not here. You know, even outside of football. Once football is over, I feel like the relationship that I build with a few of these men, is going to carry on. And that's what football is about. Also, relationships you build over time.
Football, more than any other sport, is a team sport.
Yes,
and that's probably why, more than any other sport, you see players shake hands, hug each other at the end of a game, the guys even in opposite sides of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, it's all just a game. I mean, it's a business, but what we do on the field is entertainment. It's for the fans. So, I mean, at the end, you have to shake hands. As bitter as it is, as much as we hate to lose, right here.
Pat Watkins, and in case you didn't notice, he had to leave abruptly because the bus was leaving. And so that wasn't a soft edit, to say the least. One more message, folks. Greatest game in the world.
Well, now, are you sure there's any fish in here at all? Because we haven't latched into one today yet.
Tired of sitting on the sidelines? Want to be part of the game?
Be offensive. Be radical.
The CFL is back and more radical than ever. The action never stops. It's hard-hitting, high-scoring football. Get in the game. Wear the attitude.
Come on, go, go, go. Woo!
Be offensive. Be radical. CFL football. Get in the game.
You having a little popcorn?
Yep, buy yourself some popcorn. Mike the American, Aaron the Lifer here with us. And, gentlemen, thank you for... keeping me company on the program tonight. I really appreciate your contributions. Mike, now last night the game, the first half, Ricky Ray wasn't as effective as he was in the second half. What changed?
No, I think it's just a matter of, just seeing what Edmonton was doing. And, Edmonton's got a great secondary. They got Burnett and I forgot the other guy's name, but they have – them along with some nice pass rushers off the end. So I think it was just a matter of, getting an understanding of what's their game plan, what's their scheme. And once they figured that out in the second half, I think the necessary adjustments were made and they exploited them.
Aaron?
I think they just took the foot off the gas pedal, to be quite honest, Frank. I think, I think our offensive linemen stepped back a little bit. The guys rushed to Ricky. Still no interceptions this year, pretty happy about that. But I think the pressure was on, the good receivers were a little less sharp. I really think it just boiled down to them taking the foot off the gas, no deeper than that.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with you. Inman did not look as effective as we're accustomed to, did he?
No, he almost looked Ozy. Yeah. Childs still looked like he was trying to earn a spot for next year, though. So.
Oh, is he amazing or what? I mean, ex-quarterback comes in, changes his position. Now he's a receiver and a deep threat to boot.
Yeah. I mean, he was very impressive the last two games. Yeah,
you know,
especially in Montreal. I think he really stepped up in Montreal.
What I found really humorous, did you notice when you looked up at the scoreboard and they'd be keying in on a player, and then the play was to him and the next play? It was a little weird.
Almost, it's almost like they were calling the fence.
no kidding. It looked like it, didn't it? Because in particular, I'm remembering Childs and I forget who else, but they were showing their pitcher and going, he's had five receptions for 185 yards. The next play goes to him. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
I mean, really?
One was for Barnes. Because
One was for Barnes, too. That's right. Yeah, you were watching at the same time I was.
I've been critical of Barnes. But, you know, I think we're seeing a return of the connection that he and Ricky have had. It wasn't there last year. Quite frankly, I was really critical of that component of bringing him over, but it's working out quite well this year. He's been consistent. He hasn't been a star, but I have to be consistent.
Aaron, you have to admit, though, it was nice to have Barnes in the Grey Cup game.
Oh, for sure. Oh, in the Grey Cup game, I always wonder where he was all season.
and he showed up at the right time. Mike, So your feeling is then that that basically the secondary and the Edmonton defense really did, and I got to tell you, at the game, you know, because you get to select what you're watching, and I do spend a lot of time watching when we're on offense. I spend a lot of time watching it, Ricky and the receivers, and I did notice that, you know, you're 100% right. Edmonton really did rush the passer. They really did. It didn't matter if they only did it with four, if they did it with six, or they brought on the full blitz. Ricky did not have much time to make any throws.
Yeah, no. I guess, you know, part of it, too, is just, in a way, I think, I don't know. At times, I think Milanovic's offense just, it's almost over. Like, maybe it's the wrong thing to say. I was going to say maybe it's too complicated at times. And it takes receivers like a long time to grasp it. Like Childs and Barnes basically didn't get it until the playoff run. Honestly, it's even in a game, you notice that they always have a situation where the first quarter and a half of the game, they still don't really totally get exactly what they need to do. And then by about halftime on, they always sort of start to figure it out. And so it's like even in-game, his adjustments and things they work on, the new wrinkles for that week, I think even that is like still kind of over the head of some of the receivers.
But it does give something for the team, the players, to reach for. You're 100% right. And if there's a common thread in defense, offense, and even, I have to say, even in the special teams, it is complicated. But when the adjustment factor... I don't think there's a team in the CFL that makes adjustments better than the Argonauts.
Well, except the Riders, of course.
Well, that's your team. Oh, Aaron, by the way, his team is Saskatchewan.
Hey, I like the Argos, too. I have three teams, so I just want to make it clear.
So
half the CFL is what you're saying.
Sure. And you know what, Mike? I'm an Argo fan, but I like Hamilton and I like Edmonton. But,
right.
You know, we all know what would happen if Argos met either of those other two teams. We know exactly what side my bread is buttered.
Mm-hmm.
There's no conning anybody here, buddy. No, it's all good. By the way, Aaron, Mike is one of my favorite guys to call in. He's from Minnesota and used to be a Minnesota fan. And he has family in Winnipeg. And he follows the Canadian Football League. And I'm doing this also for the listeners. He follows the Canadian Football League with real serious interest, and I got to say I'm proud of that. And Aaron, for the listeners, is a diehard Argo fan. He's an Argo lifer, and he loves his team so much that he doesn't let his family get in the way, so he brings them with him. So that's
I'm a former Ottawa Renegade season ticket holder as well when I used to live in Ottawa, so... I'm looking forward to the return of the Red Blacks, or I believe that's their name. So I'm looking forward to the return of them. I think it'll be fun to watch. But my all of my loyalty at this point resides with the Argos.
Well,
so
in honor
when,
of
when the Red Blacks come back, are you gonna switch over, or are you just gonna stay with the Argos for good?
I live in Toronto now. I'm an Argos fan, and I'll be an Argo lifer. But I'll enjoy watching Red Blacks develop.
He will like us. He will have second favorite teams.
Right. Right. Okay. And so
in honor,
when the Red Blacks show up, are you gonna put down any black and red, or are you just gonna keep it all double blue?
It will be all double blue.
Okay.
But that's okay.
Yeah,
I don't discriminate. We're going to take another short break. Here, guys, this is for you, Aaron, because I'm thinking of you.
It is a first down for Ottawa. The football at the 24 of Saskatchewan. Clements coming back to throw again. Looking, gets all kinds of protection. Throws into the end zone for Gabriel. Touchdown!
In 1898, the Ottawa Football Club adopted the red and black of the Canadians that fought with Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders in the Spanish-American War. They also adopted the name. Et c'est à partir de ces débuts modestes que le rouge et noir a été associé à la ville d'Ottawa. The Carleton Ravens, Ottawa Fury FC, Ottawa 67s, and the Ottawa Senators have all adopted the colors and built their own history and traditions. Mais le rouge et noir se retrouve d'abord sur les chandails des équipes d'Ottawa dans la LCF. Les couleurs de Russ Jackson et de Tony Gabriel. To all who have worn the red and black. À tous ceux qui ont porté le rouge et noir, who have battled on the gridiron on behalf of our great city. Et qui se sont battus sur le terrain au nom de notre belle ville. We honor your tradition. Nous préservons votre tradition as we begin to forge our own. Et nous commençons à forger la nôtre. Like the blades that cut timber in the upper Ottawa Valley and the men who rode them down the Ottawa River past the locks of Bytown. We are balanced, dangerous, unstoppable. Nous sommes les Rouges et Noirs d'Ottawa. We are the Ottawa Red Blacks.
You're listening to Candid Frank Live, streaming on Rouge Radio. We're the Argos cheerleaders.
Now, this just means that there's going to be another team in the CFL. This one's going to say Ottawa, and they're going to be dressed in red and black, that the Argos can squarely kick up the ass. But, you know, having said that, I don't mean to be rude, but, you know.
They picked a great time to join the league, though. How about that? Like, look how bad the East is. I mean, they're going to make the playoffs just by on default.
On paper. They're going to make the playoffs on paper. They won't even have to go on the field. Aaron, so now you have some history. You have some history with Ottawa. I lived in Ottawa, too. I lived in Ottawa back in the 70s for a very short time. And I managed a restaurant called Fat Albert's out in at Bank and Fifth. And so you know where Bank and Fifth is, right?
I do. I used to live in Alta Vista, South End.
There you go. And I lived on Lyon and Cooper, just south of the RCMP building. Yeah, absolutely. And and I used to manage the restaurant there, and that's where Lansdowne Park was. And I got to tell you, Ottawa fans have always been and will always be good fans, given a team that brings some respectability to the town. Do you think that this is the organization that they – I have my opinions, but do you think they've at least started on the right step, getting the right kind of people running the team?
Yeah, I think they've actually got a fantastic group running the team right now. I mean, a lot of people believe that the Renegades failed because the community didn't support them. That was never the case. Unfortunately, there was not a lot of positive communications around them. I think they've got the right team. They've taken the time. It's been a 3 to 4 year, if not more, process bringing them back. Did they hit it out of the park with a name? not sure yet. I think we'll all come into it after some time. I do think if they draft smartly and start the season smartly in 2014, they'll have a good thing going. I know I've spoken to a few friends. I have family still in Ottawa, and they're quite excited to go to the games. You know, they've never, I think they've attended one or two CFL games themselves, and one of my brothers is looking for season tickets, and he's never even a big CFL fan. But I think it's up to us, you know, CFL fans and season ticket holders of other teams to kind of spread that story for them and help Ottawa out. But I think this ownership group you have in place now is the right team, for sure.
It's never been a question of whether there's a desire to support the team. I think it's been more of a question of whether the team deserved the support. And I'm not saying that for any other reason than just as a simple observation. You know, you can turn people off pretty quick, and that's what we're talking about here. Will this organization turn the fans off? No. I think they've got the right idea. I think they understand the landscape. And more importantly, I think they understand the game. I mean, they couldn't have hired a better general manager. I happen to believe that that is the guy that Montreal wanted as the GM, but he turned them down and moved on to Ottawa. And I believe that's why Jim Pop... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I think that is the belief. I mean, they scooped him from Montreal.
They sure did. And I believe that... Montreal was set back by that hiring by Ottawa. Because how long after he was hired did Pop hire? And I think he made a hiring that was just because he couldn't wait any longer. And, you know, and that's what happens in the CFL and in all kinds of leagues, where the big moves are made at the beginning, and that is with management. So congratulations to Ottawa for having a good, we believe, we agree. I know we agree, Aaron, that there is a good management team there in place.
I believe so in the ownership, and with Desjardins kind of leading the helm as a GM, I mean, he's got all the bearings to make this a fantastic team.
And he also can speak Rouge Noir.
Ah, c'est vrai.
C'est vrai. That's for sure. Yeah, I know it helps in Ottawa to have the French language, because wherever there's Ottawa, there's Hull right beside it.
Oh, correct. I mean, if you look at the explosion of football in the Belle Province the last couple of years, or, you know, the last 10 years, there are more people playing football in that province now newly than hockey. You know, when we start talking CFL expansion, you know, I'm a Maritimer. I have to throw that out there. So I still think the East Coast should get a team, which would be a logical competitor with Ottawa or Montreal. But, you know, having someone there who can also speak French and English in a province like New Brunswick or even the French population in Nova Scotia and address the media there, I think it's just fantastic.
Mike, we've had some discussions about, you know, Quebec City or the East Coast of Canada getting a team first. Remind me of your opinion on that score. Well, I think Mike went to get coffee. It appears he has. He's gone to get coffee. I hope it's a good coffee, Mike. He missed his cue. But that's okay. No, we talked about this earlier about, you know, I'm a fervent believer that I believe actually the East Coast will probably get the team before Quebec does. I just happen to think that politically there are some things that need to be ironed out in Quebec City before the team arrives there, before there's a team put there. And I think it would be you agree, I see. You know, the intelligent move on my part, let's put it this way. I'm going to be very like, you know, this is pretend now we're in the deep throes of CFL management and CFL organization. I would go with the East first because Quebec is a lock. But I think Quebec becomes more of a political lock if the East gets a team, because then it becomes something like this. It becomes like, well, why can't we have a team? They got one in the East Coast. Because right now, politically, the guy that runs the show in Quebec City, you know, and rightfully so, I'm sorry I don't know his name, but he is somebody who, you know, runs Laval. He's not a big fan of the CFL coming into Quebec, and he doesn't want to be a part of it. But, you know, the pressure of the East getting a team would definitely raise the profile for a city like Laval or Quebec City.
I tend to agree 100% with you, because if you look at the whole mantra of the CFL, obviously we're Canada's team. Granted they'll have a team in Montreal, but to include the capital city of the second largest province in Canada, I think there will be some political outfall from that. But I would agree with you in the order that either Halifax or Moncton, if it can support it, will have the franchise before Quebec City. And that's also because of the political will in the Maritimes and the ability to get that stadium built a little bit quicker than you'd see one go into Quebec City as well. So.
And Newfoundland is not a poor province anymore. They're not a have-not. Oil has created a situation where they're becoming a have. So financially, there should be the wherewithal there to find some money to build a CFL stadium and have a maritime team that has a maritime flavor that is not Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, or Newfoundland, but is all of them.
And I've had that discussion with a few others before, and the biggest impediment to going to Newfoundland isn't the population of the St. John's area. It's the cost of travel to the league, quite frankly. That's been one of the demise of the St. John's Maple Leafs. Was
that's right.
Quite frankly, the cost of travel.
It's
isolated.
Yep, you're right. But regardless of the costs of travel, it still doesn't take away from the emotional attachment that a maritime team would have for all the maritime provinces.
Being a Maritimer and being from Atlantic Canada, I'll be honest, Maritimers in New Brunswick PEI don't necessarily associate with Newfoundland the way that people in Central Canada and Western Canada would think. I think there's quite a degree of separation, both culturally and distance as well. However, I mean, if there are teams in New Brunswick and in Newfoundland, or in Nova Scotia and Newfoundland, I think it would add to the fun in the CFL.
But you have to start somewhere, Aaron.
I'd say start New Brunswick.
Really? You're sounding like a homer more and more.
No, honestly, growing up there, you've got Moncton that you're an hour away to Charlottetown. You're an hour away to St. John, New Brunswick, population of 120,000. You're an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes away from Fredericton, population of 80,000. You've got 100,000 in Moncton alone. Everyone talks Halifax. Halifax is a city of 200,000 plus, but you won't draw from the other parts. So, I mean, Moncton's a hub. Moncton's a hub for transit. Moncton's a hub for airlines, and Moncton's becoming a hub for business as well. To me, it's a more logical sense to go to Moncton than it is to Halifax, because Halifax is so isolated from the rest of Canada.
And I would venture to say, rather safely, I might add, that the CFL agrees with you.
Differing opinions out there.
Well, where? No. Seriously, where is Hamilton playing this year? Their game in where are they playing?
Touchdown Atlantic. They're in Moncton.
Oh, what a coincidence! Gee, I don't know where I got the idea that the CFL agrees. Oh, maybe that's why. Yeah, no, obviously. You know, the CFL is not run by morons. They're not the National Hockey League. They're run by people who understand. They're run by people who understand, because they like you and I, my friend, we have X amount of money that we can spend. We need to make sure we spend it wisely. And the CFL, the people that run the CFL, and I'm speaking to George Cope, Cohan. I'm talking about his dad now. Sorry. Yeah, I'm referring to his dad instead of him. Mark Cohan, and of course Copeland. These are people who understand, the financial wherewithal that we have to live by, and that's just a reality. And it's great when one lives within the reality of life. they can be more successful than when they, you know, imagine or believe that a team should be in Phoenix for 5 or 6 years and you pay for it. So, you know, we're lucky. We have good management in the CFL as well. And if anyone doubts and if they think I'm just kissing CFL butt, well, maybe I am. But you know what? They deserve it. I hate to say this to you folks, but the CFL now is in tandem with the TSN, Bell Media, has really turned a corner when it comes to viewing CFL games. CFL games compete with National Hockey League games on a regular basis, numbers-wise. So don't kid yourself. The CFL, while it may not be popular at the Sky Dome, I'm sorry, the Rogers Center, I do that on purpose, by the way. While it may not seem that they're that popular at the Rogers Center, that truly is irrelevant. Because you know why? Because really, we live in a TV society. We live in a society full of lazy people who just would rather turn on the TV than go to the game. Now, there's a few of us that like to contribute and want to pay attention to what's going on the field, make a contribution and all that wonderful stuff. And then there are those who sit at home. It really doesn't matter. The point is, you make money. You know, the CFL can make money with television revenue, and they can make money with gate revenue. But the gate revenue is something more that the Argos would like to generate because they benefit from it more. But from a CFL perspective, it's all good, and television's fine. Thank you very much. Mike, are you back?
Yeah, I'm here.
You went, and I asked you a very important question, which at this moment I have no idea what it was. Oh, yes. We were discussing the fact that, remember a while back we talked, I mean, I was trying to remember, we were talking Quebec or Eastern Canada first? Quebec or Eastern Canada first? Remember that conversation? Did you have an opinion on it? I can't remember.
Yeah, no, I was, from what I heard, it sounded like it was going to be, you know, the Maritimes first. But I think was it Mick, the Aussie guy that was with us? He was saying that, you know, there's a lot of people behind the scenes trying to get a team in Quebec right now. And I guess because, you know, anytime you have a real ownership group, that puts you at the forefront. So I don't know.
Mike, this is all – listen, it's okay, man, because it's all conjecture and speculation. And none of us really knows what's going to happen. Well, maybe I do, but we'll pretend I don't. I was kidding. Nobody laughed. Yeah, I hate it when I tell a joke and nobody laughs. Aaron, you gone to the bathroom now or something?
No, I'm here. I'm just making a bottle for the little one.
Oh, and when he says little one, he's not kidding. She's a beauty. She really is a beauty. You know, there's two things I love in life. This is my editorial comment for tonight. There's two things in life I really love. Babies and animals. And the more I learn about babies and animals, the more I hate people. But, you know, that just goes without saying. They're lovely. Animals and young babies, they're wonderful. Young children, they're wonderful. I'll do anything for a kid. My wife looks after a couple of kids here. I bought a basketball net, so one of them he wants to play basketball. So picked that up for him, and today he had a chance to play on it. You know, they're what make the world go round. And also the fact that I'm an Argo fan and I enjoy watching football live. Now, Mike, you said you were coming what date?
The last game of the regular season, the one the Friday nighter against Montreal.
Okay, I'm going to look forward to seeing you there. Now that Aaron knows who you are, he's going to look forward to seeing you as well. And you can hold the baby bag for him.
All right.
I think that's our last game of the season. At 6 months old, I'll bring the 5-year-old, but I think the 6-month-old is going to stay home.
Aw, come on. Mike was looking forward to changing a diaper.
All I can say is the Sky Dome isn't properly equipped to do that.
Really?
I had to change my daughter on a floor of a family washroom.
Are you kidding me? They don't have diaper. They don't have diaper stations.
Oh, they have one. If I was willing to walk around to another section.
Let me guess. The hoity-toity section.
No, there is a family section near ours. Unfortunately, the one that is in there is broken. So there is one or two on each level, and those are both occupied by young gentlemen with no kids. So I had to continue to walk.
That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. No, I mentioned it to guest services on the way out that they may want to repair the two that I saw which were broken. But those things happen.
No, you're a real gentleman and a real good guy. I, on the other hand, would complain vehemently. But that's beside the point. That's just me.
Lots of other things to complain with.
I would do the same thing you do. I only get upset when the harping begins and if it's continuous. You know, something that happens on a lark or a moment, that's one thing. But it's the repeated stuff that drives me crazy. But anyway,
I agree.
And if you keep going and you can't find a place at all, that's got to be frustrating for you. That's for sure. Okay, let's go to Mike and let's talk about next week's games, because we are now officially in the second hour. We just experienced week 8, and now week 9 is upon us. And for those of us that are Toronto fans, we get to celebrate a reunion, if you will. The Calgary Stampeders come back into Toronto, where they can be reminded of the fact that the Argos beat them last year in the 100th Grey Cup. How fired up are Calgary going to be, Aaron?
How fired up? Oh, I think Cornish is biting. I think Cornish is biting at the bit. I think that he's struggling to sleep at this point. No, I'm expecting that this is going to be one barn burner between both teams. You know, the Argos trying to protect the fact that we won, and Calgary trying to punish us for winning from last year. I think both teams have some injury problems right now. Both O-lines are struggling a little bit, and both defenses a little bit as well. The offenses of both teams are firing, though, so it's going to be an interesting game. But, yeah, no doubt about it. Calgary is they're coming in here to spoil our party.
Yeah, they sure are. And that party is the boat logos making a reappearance after
Hallelujah.
You know, I joked with John Granger about – you know, this should have happened at the 25th anniversary, not the 30th.
I don't think John was as adamant about bringing it back, and he didn't have the troops at that time to bring it back. But
well,
I think
yeah.
the presence of the boat logo around the Rogers Centre on this Friday night, I think is going to be quite impressive.
I'm inclined to agree with you, and, you know, the boat logo reminds me of Condridge Holloway. It's a great... a great moment in CFL history, actually, because the Argos were always the lovable losers until then. And then they ended up actually winning and repeating, for that matter, the next year. So,
yeah. Well, the drought had been so long at that point. I mean, the city's been starved for a champion for years before that. I wasn't even a resident here, but I was aware of kind of what was going on back then. Watching a little bit of CFL as I did as a kid, and you know, looking back at the historical aspect of it, because I wasn't around, you see how that team united Toronto like no other team, other than, you know, let's say the 92, 93, 94 Jays. I mean, for sure the Maple Leafs haven't done it for 40 plus years at this point, but you know, I really hope that you're going to see some of the fans that were at that game, or sorry, in attendance around those years. I'm hoping that they'll come out for the nostalgia. I do have to say the organization has been trying to do a push from a marketing standpoint on it this week. I know I've been doing the push as well through my organization and at home as well. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to see us creep over those 20, 25,000 fan levels and back up to the 30s where we belong.
Remind me of your where you're pushing from your direct perspective.
Are you asking Mike that, or are you asking myself?
You, Aaron. I'm still talking to you.
Oh, I'm pushing around work. I'm through my Twitter feeds, through Facebook, through organizations I belong to. I run a couple charity golf tournaments as well, so I've reached out to people. The Argonauts actually came out with this, a great ticket price today, trying to generate fans. So I think I emailed that out to about 200 people that I'm connected to, offering to get them in our section to experience a game, you know, close to the field in the live section. In the golf tournament, I've offered a couple for me to purchase a couple tickets for them to auction off for early registration for next year. So do what I can to try to generate some interest.
Well, tell us about your handles, whether it be Twitter or whether it would be the organizations that you're working with or creating.
Oh, well, from a Twitter perspective, it's really, really simple. I'm at Aaron in Toronto. I figured that was nice and simple. Facebook, really simple. Again, it's Aaron McIntosh. You usually find me because I have an Argo logo splashed somewhere on my page. And one of the more prominent charities I'm working with right now is a group called NAVA Cup, N-A-V-A-C-U-P. We every year we have a charity golf tournament, and we raise money to purchase laptops for children in the Toronto area who can't afford them. So, you know, these are kids that are struggling. They're trying to struggle to keep up with their peers. There's no computer in their home. So not only do they benefit from getting a computer, their friends and family do. And we have silent auctions. Last year I auctioned off some free tickets to the Argos games that I purchased. A year before that I had an Argos jersey. And we've been speaking with the Michael Pinball, the Mike Pinball Clemens Foundation to see what we can do to partner with him to generate more of an interest from the Argos organization into what we're doing.
Well, listen, you have to call me offline. And we'll discuss. I'd like to do more for you. I really like what it sounds like you're doing. And please hold my hand to the fire. I just said I'm willing to help. Whatever way you need me to help, I'd be more than glad to. And here's why. I have four daughters, and we have like 12 computers in the house. So I can understand what you're saying deeply, is that there's a proliferation of disadvantage, if that's possible. If you can, I'm doing a positive and a negative here. There is an opportunity for many that many don't have. And if I can help out in any way, you let me know, whether it's just simple mention on here or a financial help. One within my means, which isn't much, but we'll see. We'll stretch the purse strings to see how far it goes, whether it means showing up at one of those golf tournaments or not. It doesn't matter to me. We'll figure out something, Aaron. Anybody who has such beautiful children like you do, I'd like to help out in any way possible.
You know, I really appreciate that, Frank, and I'll definitely see how we can get you involved, and we're always looking for Masters of Ceremonies. It's me every year, but... you know,
I don't want your job.
Okay,
I don't want your job. Listen, if you want some help doing
talk.
It, yeah, we'll talk. I'm more than willing to help out in any capacity whatsoever. Mike,
yeah.
While you don't have any charitable things going on, we'll take advantage of this opportunity to mention your webpage and your blog spot, if you wouldn't mind.
Yes, sir. It's truecflfan.blogspot.com. And, yeah, I need to get to updating. I've just been so busy at work. It's just been kind of a hectic week here.
I hear you. Listen, don't worry about it. We all do the best we can. The unfortunate truth of the matter is that we are all multitasking, and it is the new wave. Back in the day, people had one job, and that was it. If it was an easy job, you were lucky. If it was a difficult job, F you. So, you know, that's just the way it works. But, you know, there's nothing we can't do here to do a little bit. But believe me, don't fall for the pretense that I'm going to solve anything for either of you. But anything I can do to help you guys out, I always appreciate. And I always want to do. All right? You're wonderful people, and I really respect you. And besides, I appreciate your contribution on the program tonight. It's always nice to have company on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely.
And take it sincerely. All right, so this week we talked about Calgary. Big week with Toronto. We just said boat logos coming back. It's a big deal. Now you got Montreal going into BC. Now, they were in Saskatchewan, and now they got BC coming in. What are the odds? Mike, I'll start with you with BC and Montreal. How do you see this one shaking out?
Yeah, I guess we saw Montreal's defense look pretty nice, but their offense, unless Cavillo comes back, I don't think that they're going to be able to do enough to stop BC, so I'm picking BC in that one.
I'm inclined to agree with you. The only drawback I have on your take on it is that Montreal lost a close game and BC won a close one. So that could be the margin of difference, and Montreal could accidentally, and I say accidentally, beat BC. Aaron? Your opinion on that game?
You know, I never like to see televised violence on TV, so I'm really hoping that game's not going to be broadcast because I think Montreal is going to get absolutely slaughtered. Everything I'm reading about the Alouettes injury list today, they're talking head injury to Calvillo. They're seriously looking at concussion. Bedard's out, Hebert's out. I mean the list goes on. I think they're going to be slaughtered. I think you may see upwards of 17 to 20 point differential. I feel bad for the team, but I think that's going to happen.
So abuse is at the order of the day.
I would believe so. Usually, I mean, I'd give Montreal a bigger hand up and say, you know, this is Montreal. This is the team that destroyed the East and dominated the East. But that was a couple seasons ago. This isn't the Montreal team from, you know, 2006 through 2011. This is a complete different team. And just riddled with injuries, poor management in place right now, uncertain of themselves. And I think BC is just revving and ready to go. They need to get that. They need to maintain, and they actually need to get the first spot back in the West. So I think they're coming full guns fired.
Yeah, I don't think Saskatchewan's that safe in first. I agree with you. Now the back half of the home and home, Winnipeg and Hamilton. We'll stick with you, Aaron. This time it happens in Hamilton. Will Winnipeg return the favor and have a road victory?
I don't know. How many quarterbacks are they bringing with them?
Eight, last I heard.
Yeah.
Actually, they're looking for Ricky Ray. They're wondering if Ricky Ray can, like, split, you know, like, he play on Friday and Saturday.
maybe we can loan them Trevor Harris for a couple quarters. I don't know.
Well, he seems to be number three in our depth chart, so, yeah, we probably could.
Yeah, I think we could. I mean, I'm a big fan of Claros. But, yeah, back to the Hamilton game. I think this one's going to be a tight one. But I do see Hamilton walking away with the points on this one. I see them closing in a little bit. I think Hamilton's underrated. I think they didn't
for
a few weeks.
I agree with you. I think Hamilton's underrated.
Yeah, I think Burris is going to have a really good game again. I think Fantuz, I mean, his first week back last week, but I think he was enjoying himself quite a lot in Winnipeg, and I think you're going to see that again this week.
I think he had some fun, yeah. Mike, how about you, bud?
Yeah, I agree with Aaron all the way. I think he absolutely nailed it. The one X factor is the change of offensive coordinators for Winnipeg. I know they got the Ticats former coach, and I don't know, maybe he might make a difference, but I don't know. The Winnipeg's a total mess right now.
Yeah, but no, Mike, that was a really good point about the coordinator. I mean, the fact that he knows Hamilton, that could throw a different wrench in there. I still think Hamilton will get the victory, but, you know, that's something to think about.
Yeah. Is Buck Pierce going to start, or did they make a decision on that?
Well, as far as I know, Buck Pierce wasn't going to start. Didn't they make him not the starter? Wasn't he not the starter?
It's the coordinator they fired, Crouton. He was the one pushing for – well, he was on first that pushed for Gultz and then for Max Hall. So, I don't know. I'm just assuming that they might go back to Pierce now. I don't know if there was anything.
I think you'll see Pierce.
I think you should see Pierce. And I agree that I'm not saying I agree with what the decision was back then, but yeah, Pierce should be the guy. You know, they've got to give him the ball because – they've got to determine whether he's the guy or not because, you know, it's Fisher Cup 8, right? I mean, you can't have him hanging in the wings because he's just, A, too big a contract, B, too big a profile in Winnipeg, and he knows it. And, you know, he's made noise. Like, you know, hey, excuse me, I am not a backup. Do you know who I am? You know? So, yeah, so I see Buck Pierce in. I agree with you guys for the same reasons. And Hamilton could make some distance in the East where they could cement a playoff position if all is true that, you know, the crossover being an issue with both Montreal and Winnipeg not having good years. Hamilton could end up, you know, home team for the playoffs. And this will go a long way towards cementing that, don't you think, guys? Starting with you, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you see Hamilton, like, and, you know, we talked about the whole coach's post and pregame speeches, and I think Ken Austin is another great one where after the last two wins, he's really been stressing to his team to keep focus and that they're about to get on the roll. And I just think he just breathes confidence into his players, and I think he's a great coach. And if I could also add, this is going to be a great offseason for Zach Caleros. I mean, he's a free agent. He could get drafted in the expansion draft, but if he does hit the market, I mean, he's going to get paid. I mean, wow. Could you imagine the bidding war between Winnipeg, Ottawa, you know, maybe Montreal might get in the mix. That's even, heck, even Edmonton. I mean, he could walk away with a pretty nice contract.
I'd have to agree with you. I used to watch him play for Cincinnati Bearcats. I went down and saw him destroy UConn one game where I think he threw for about 500-plus yards when Pike wasn't available. He's a phenomenal young talent. I think he's got some longevity in this league as well.
Mm-hmm. Would it be safe to say that he could be getting anywhere between $250,000 and $300,000 a year? And having said that, that's a pretty interesting pay scale.
Absolutely. I mean, Winnipeg, you almost have to, just because, I mean, like I know I have a lot of family that are still huge fans of theirs, and the fan base is just absolutely, you know, at just done with all the quarterbacks. I mean, the pressure on them to go out and get someone is immense. And just like in Saskatchewan, I mean, the CFL matters big time in Winnipeg. And being up there, you know, even though they got the Winnipeg Jets now, they still bleed blue and gold. And if they don't at least make an attempt and put a big offer out there for Caleros or somebody, I mean, the fans are just, they're not going to have it. And they're going to show it in ticket sales if they don't do something. So I think the pressure is there for them to have to start. And he's perfect, too. I mean, he's only 24, and, you know, he's an exciting player.
He's got a future. He's got a future.
He'd be like, I could imagine, I already know, like, tons of all the Bomber fans in my family have been pushing for that guy since that game he had against the Lions. He's just been, you go to all the websites for the Bomber fans, and everyone's talking about, you know, Caleros 2014, and you already got people with his jerseys, like, you know, those customized jerseys. I already know a couple of people that already went and got them just because they just think it's a foregone conclusion they're going to get the guy. So, you know, I'm happy for the young man. He seems like a good guy, smart guy, works hard. So he looks like he's got all the necessary tools to be a great franchise quarterback. So
he's a Milanovic clone. I'll tell you right now,
you,
Mike.
Sir.
Yeah.
No, I don't mean his playing
Trevor
ability.
Harris. Yeah,
I don't mean his playing ability.
No, I get that. Yeah. Now, I remember you said him and Trevor Harris always spend like an extra hour after practice just working on stuff, and that's a testament to, you know, the guy's work ethic. And if, you know, as long as you work hard and you can combine that with talent, you know, and focus and just the right opportunity, that's always a recipe for, you know, tremendous success. So.
Well, yeah. I reminded Trevor Harris last weekend when I saw him last week. I said, "Listen, your chance will come, you know, and it'll come because it will." Trevor Harris is a great quarterback too. Just right now, Caleros has developed in a way that's more I think Milanovic said it 100%. Well, I'm not even going to question what Milanovic says. Milanovic said it. And this is what he thinks. He thinks this guy's more suited to the offense that the Argos have. That doesn't mean that Trevor Harris isn't a good quarterback. It just means that Caleros at this time runs an offense the way Milanovic expects it to be run, like Ricky Ray. And that's just it. That's all. You know. And to me, the irony is that I don't know how he says that, because Caleros' main hay is, you know, he makes defenders miss. I mean, he makes them miss. And gives himself time for a pass by having a defensive player have him dead to rights, and they miss. I find that amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, he made Big Hill look so, I mean, that was just
he made him look Little Hill.
Yeah, seriously. And I love the fact that he's willing to take a chance. Like, he's got a little bit of a Brett Favre sort of gunslinger mentality. Like, both those touchdown passes to Barnes
Doug
and to Flutie. Childs.
Doug
yeah,
Flutie.
You know, there was double coverage, and I knew, you know, they showed on TSN
in
Milan
between.
And it was kind of giving him a hard time for that. But, you know, that's a true quarter. That's, to me, it's entertainment, right? And the guy's got to be willing to go out there, show some balls, put it up there. And, you know, he knew Barnes and Childs had the athleticism to get it up high. And I just love the fact that he's willing to take a chance. And as a fan, that's what the CFL needs, more of that. I mean, honestly, I like Ricky Ray. He's a great quarterback. But the man can get to the point where it's almost robotic. And he just throws that check down pass, I think, him and Lule way too much. And it really just makes the game so much more boring.
I know, but it's their bread and butter.
I get it. If when you're a fan of the team, you don't care. You just want your team to succeed. But I'm looking at it from an outside observer. It's just like, come on, Ray, just throw it down the field once. You know, stop with this.
I know you want the completion percentage high,
but it's like, good God. Just throw it 20 yards down the field, you know?
I hate you right now, because that's what I was thinking in the first half. I don't know about Aaron, but I'm like, come on, Ricky, throw it long, man. What the heck? Stop with the sideline crap. You know, right. I know. That's what happened yesterday. I don't know, Aaron, if you want to kick in on this one. It seemed to me in the first half, Ricky was playing very conservatively, wasn't he?
Oh, I think so. But he was delivering every ball was on spot for him in the first quarter. But that was because he was playing it safe. He played a simple, 15, 20 yards out to the side, move ahead. 15, 20 yards out to the side, move ahead. There was nothing uncharacteristic in the way he was playing. There were some eight-yard passes.
There were a couple of eight-yard passes in there, too.
Yeah, some small stuff. But there was nothing where did he pull out of it?
The last person that's going to criticize Ricky. But I'm just saying, I'm just being honest. There were times there when I was saying, come on, Ricky, throw something deep. You know, and when I say deep, I'm not talking a 50-yard pass. I'm talking, 15.
Right.
I'm talking 20, 25.
25,
There weren't any of those. But, hey, listen, you can't question success. They came out in the second half, and they turned it around, and great. You know, and Kolaros is that kind of guy. Kolaros is a chance taker. Kolaros is a guy that – when he drops back and defenders think they've got him, they don't. And he knows he's going to avoid that guy, and then he's ready to make the pass, like Mike said. Mike, you're 100% right, where he throws into coverage, double coverage, and throws a high pass, knowing that the athleticism of the guys he has, receiving, will get to the ball. So, and the key with every great quarterback isn't how great their passes are. It's how catchable they are, because that just is a sign of faith in the receivers.
And that's why the Bomber fans are so high on the kid, because if you look at their offense, he's exactly what they need. They have a terrible offensive line. They've got a lot of good, athletic, tall receivers, and they got a great running back. He's exactly what they need. They need a quarterback that can move around, buy time, and is willing to take a chance down the field and allow their big play receivers like Matthews and Edwards and Corey Watson to be able to use their size and athleticism, and couple that with a strong running back. Could you imagine how effective the read option would be with him and Chad Simpson? I mean, defenses would be having nightmares. And that's what they need to help out the fact that their offensive line is so bad at pass protection. It's laughable. That's why Pierce always gets knocked out, because it's just like – the guy's like, it's like they're a bunch of matadors up there, and it's just like open season on Pierce, and it's just,
Pierce is a statue. It doesn't matter whether he weighs 300 pounds or 200 pounds. He's still a statue. There's no, for most of
what
for
he
all
was
intensive.
Thinking, losing all that weight. He just like, I was so worried for him.
Well,
he
was
kind of
hoping that he was kind of hoping that he'd be more mobile, but the problem is he's a dropback passer, so that doesn't help. You're totally right as far as what Kolaros can bring to Winnipeg, and more power to Winnipeg if they can be more competitive. As an Argo fan, let's be clear about where I stand on this, and I think Aaron will agree as well. We go to the games because we love watching the game. If the Argonauts win a 2-point win as far as I'm concerned, I would enjoy that more than a 17-point win. I don't know, Aaron, how you feel about it, but I just enjoy the game. And I'm not saying that I look forward to the Argos losing, because that's not true. But I have no problem with the other teams cutting the difference, narrowing the margin.
Not at all. I mean, if you think of that season opener against Hamilton, I mean,
awesome.
We were on the edge.
Awesome.
I don't know if I sat down. In the second
exactly.
half, I literally don't know if I sat down. Yeah.
And that, my friend, is entertainment.
Yeah, speaking of sitting down, guys, I appreciate the company as well, but I've got to go upstairs and take care of someone who's waking up. So I wanted to thank you for having me on. And, Mike, it's been a pleasure chatting with you as well.
Yeah, me too. I hope to see you when that game against Montreal.
Oh, unless there's an injury, I'll be there.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
And when he refers to the injury, he's talking about his team, his personal team.
talking a personal injury on me, yes, yeah.
Aaron, listen. Oh,
and
if I
wanted to donate to your charity, was there a website you had that we could go to, or...
Yeah, it's Nava Cup, www.
How do you say
dot,
that?
Nava, N-A-V-A.
Okay.
Cup, C-U-P, .org.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, you can check it out. We don't have an online site, merchant site or anything at this point. We usually just do tickets, but we always do, if willing, we always do accept cash donations or angel sponsorship things as well. So you can, you'll see my profile on there. You can always send an email at info@navacup.org, and it will either reach me or my partner, and we can chat from there.
All right.
Perfect.
Aaron?
Thanks, Mike.
Aaron, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure having you on, and I look forward to having you in the upcoming weeks. You're intelligent.
No problem,
Jim. And wonderful contribution is most assuredly appreciated.
And I appreciate that, and I'll call in as often as I can moving forward. So.
That's all I can hope for. From one Argo fan to another, thank you very much, my man.
I appreciate it. Good night, gentlemen.
Nope, good night,
Aaron. That's Aaron McIntosh. Aaron is, as we discussed, an Argo lifer. You know, we go to games and we support the team, but more importantly, we derive a lot of satisfaction with being there together. Thanks again to Aaron McIntosh, beautiful family that he does have. And I have a horn, and his kids just love yelling into the horn. This week, they didn't get a chance to do it, Mike, but I'm sure it'll happen in the upcoming weeks. I'm going to probably spend a little more time up where he's sitting. All right, so Mike, we didn't get through all the games. Aaron left. We got all preoccupied with Winnipeg and Hamilton.
Yeah.
We didn't. I don't think we discussed Montreal and Saskatchewan, did we?
Oh no, from the previous. No, we did actually.
That was the last thing. I'm talking. Okay, my apologies. We talked BC Montreal. We talked Calgary Toronto. We started talking Winnipeg and Hamilton, but I don't think we really fleshed it out, did we?
Yeah, no, we did, yeah. I remember we all picked Hamilton to win that
game. Okay, so then we have one game left. That's Saskatchewan and Edmonton. I think Edmonton's going to win that game.
Wow, okay.
I'm serious. I think Edmonton's going to win that game. I think they're due.
All right. Well, I'm sorry I have to disagree, but I think the
Riders
are going to go in there and totally blow them out. I think what happened was just, you know, it's just certain teams. I think Mike Riley just happened to have a good game, but that Riders pass rush, they're going to tear him to pieces. You remember that game in week one? They almost put the guy in the hospital. I mean, I think we're going to see the fact that, and I'll just add this, the reason why he was so successful was, and this is the issue that we talked about last week with me, you, and John, is the lack of a pass rush from the defensive line from the Toronto Argonauts. And this is an issue that they've been, at some point this season, you know, maybe since September when they get the influx of new players, but they just have no pass rush whatsoever. Unless they blitz, there's nothing. And, on the flip side, the Riders, they have some really nice pass rushers in John Chick and Ricky Foley, Keith Shirligan and Terrius George coming up the middle. They, you know, Richie Hall's defense is all predicated on pass rush and sending blitzes. So Edmonton in week one, when they went up against them, they had no hope. I mean, Mike Riley got hit about 30 times, sacked numerous times. He was constantly thrown under pressure. So I expect more of the same with this bad offensive line, so... That's my two cents.
Well, you know what? I'll be honest with you. I said Edmonton would win. It's more of a wish and a prayer, but still, it's my wish and my prayer. Well, we talked about
you like Mike Riley, huh? I'm a fan of the guy.
You know what? Mike Riley's a throwback, and I like him. I like his moxie. If I can use an old word, I like his moxie. He's a, I like him. Will he be able to carry that team to championships? Maybe not. But he will at least bring them towards, confidence. And that's really what his job is going to be at this point, is to help that team build up some confidence. And that's something they don't have right now. And that's why they lost against the Argos last night. If they had been a more confident team, they wouldn't have the lull early in the second half. And unfortunately, they came out in the second half, the confident Argonauts who know their defense, their offense is going to make adjustments. Edmonton didn't. And that's why they lost. And it's not a crime. It's just the way it is. That is, every team has their strength and every team has their weakness. The strength of the Argonauts is that they're managed by guys that have the right players in the right place at the right time. Edmonton is trying to find them still. They're a young team. There's nothing wrong with that. Edmonton fans, you're going to have a great team in the future. I mean, that offensive line that they have that's so young is going to destroy other defenses in the future. In the future, not today, but in the future.
Absolutely.
It just requires some patience. And then what happens is, and Mike, as you know, in football and in every sport, you have talent. The key is, do you keep the right talent or do you give it away? So, Mike and Frank aren't the only ones that realize that Edmonton has a great offensive line. There's going to be teams trying to pick off those guys one at a time. You know what I'm saying? So, it's all about what you keep sometimes. It's a trade you don't make sometimes if it's bigger than the trade you make.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, a lot of teams, as you noticed prior to this season, a lot of teams made a lot of splashy contract extensions, like Nick Lewis and Fred Stamps, to name a few, all got extensions. And that's the reason is because, all the teams are looking forward to this offseason where, if you've noticed, a lot of players structured their contracts so that they would be free agents for this upcoming season because they knew that Ottawa would be, big players in the free agent market. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see quite a few pretty talented young players from across the league switch over to Ottawa because the Red Blacks are going to have the money to throw at players. And I wouldn't be surprised to see, especially young offensive linemen, this is the perfect time to be free agents because the market is definitely there.
I agree with you.
Are you all right, Frank? You okay?
Yeah, and I think I'm about to die. I'm not sure.
Oh man. Okay.
First time on live television. Sorry, live radio.
Hey, you need some water.
I just had some water that went down the wrong side.
Oh. the worst.
Okay, so I'm going to take a short. Oh, my God. Be right back.
I'm Quincy Hart, and I started I Believe in Me because I saw there was a need for us to believe in ourselves more than life teaches us to believe in ourselves. People believe in negative statistics, therefore they become statistics. Elementary school students and middle school students are failing and not passing their tests. High school students are dropping out at an alarming rate. The unemployment rate is at an all-time high. With self-belief, self-confidence, and an overall positive self-image, we can fix a lot of these problems that we're facing. With the positive self-image, that elementary school student and that middle school student will succeed in class and be promoted to high school. That high school student will complete high school and graduate from college. That individual that's unemployed will find a job or create work for themselves. I believe in me. Therefore, I have the confidence to believe in you. I believe that you will help me fulfill my desires to pour into the younger generation. They label Generation X. Teach them the self-confidence they need to become Generation Excellent. I believe in me. I believe in you. Join me on this mission.
definition of bullying. What is the definition of bullying? Well, it's the definition of being picked on. And sometimes people, you know, the biggest problem about bullies is they don't realize they're bullies because they think what they're doing is funny. That's the biggest problem with bullies. When they throw a kid in a locker, they think it's funny. When they make fun of a kid because of what he has in his lunchbox, they think it's funny, so it's okay. And when they pick on somebody, and in the process of picking on them, they think it's funny. Well, it's not funny. It's bullying. Anytime you derive enjoyment on someone else's suffering and or someone else's, how shall I say, negative experience, that's bullying. That's what bullying is. Bullying, that's what bullying is. Bullying is taking somebody's life as they know it and trying to change it, trying to impact on it, trying to make them uncomfortable. That's what bullying is. Unfortunately, some people haven't learned that lesson yet, but they will. And the reason they will is because the major part of society will remind them what they're doing is not right. And that's the only way to solve bullying. Bullying, the only way to solve bullying is to ensure that the bullies are made to be exposed. Exposed for what they are. Okay, Mike. We're down to the last 19 minutes. I've gotten my throat back. I don't know what it is that I drank. It can't be the wine. It mustn't be the wine. It has to be the water.
Yeah, you're okay now, like, as far as...
I'm not sure, Mike. I've never been okay, but, you know, like, but, you know, well enough to do the show? Yeah, I can do that. Okay, so, you know, we've gone through all the games that are going to happen, and why don't we look a little bit ahead, and I know it's very early. We're only, you know, approaching week 9, but the playoffs aren't that far away, are they?
No, they're not.
And how do you see them shaking out, Mikey?
Yeah, in the East, I think we're looking at probably Hamilton hosting Montreal in the East semifinals, and I definitely expect Hamilton to go on and win that and head to Toronto for the East final. And in the West, I'm still feeling like it's going to be Calgary and BC as the number 2 and number 3 seed. Not quite sure who's going to be hosting that situation, but whoever comes out of that will be heading out to Mosaic in front of the Sea of Green, otherwise known as Rider Nation, which should be about 40,000 plus, and should be walking into a slaughterhouse, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I I've been saying it from the beginning of the year, I think we're definitely headed, we're just on the collision course of the Argos and Riders, and that's going to be so fun to see the Rider, see the Argos have to go into Rider Nation and have to overcome, you know, the Riders and then that just overwhelming home support they're going to get. It's going to be awesome. I think just from a football fan, even if you don't like the CFL, that would be the perfect game to tune in just for the atmosphere alone. It's going to be quite a scene and a spectacle. So I'm really excited for this upcoming Grey Cup. I can't wait to see Ricky Ray try to go in there dealing with that crowd noise and, you know, Chad Owens and Durant trying to get the monkey off his back. So, I don't know. I can go on and on about that.
Well, okay, you set the scene. My turn. I agree with you that Hamilton will be the home team. But I don't think it'll be Montreal. I think it'll be Edmonton.
Okay.
And I think what's going to happen is that Hamilton's going to beat Edmonton. And I have some serious concerns. Now, this is me, the sportscaster, talking, not the Argo fan, not the wishful thinker. I think Hamilton could make it to the Grey Cup.
Oh,
and the reason
God.
They'll make it to the reason they'll make it to the Grey Cup is that the team doesn't listen to Milanovic and Jones.
Oh, no.
I'm telling you, these guys better not underestimate Hamilton at that point in the season. I'm telling you.
Could you imagine if they do that? They go into the Rogers Center and come out?
I'm just telling you.
Oh, the Rogers, the Argos could not live that down for so long. Oh, my God.
Oh, they'll live it down. It won't be the end of the world. It'll just be another game. By the time it's over, only people like you will make a big deal out of it. People like me will go crying and will not be happy. But
oh boy, see, people like us, what about John? How's John? How would John take that? Oh, good God. The guy would, you wouldn't hear from him for at least a month or two.
Probably.
Wow, that would be,
but,
yeah.
And again, I repeat, I want to make this clear. If the Argo players and the Argo team does not listen to their coaches and their manager and don't hear and read the writing on the wall, they could be taken by a team like Hamilton, who will be building up a bit of a momentum going into the playoffs. And that's only my opinion. I don't know anything. You know what I mean? I'm just a football fan who happens to be an Argo fan. But I also happen to be a guy who's doing a show where I need to be honest with myself. And sometimes honesty is hard. And this is the hard part. The hard part is if the Argo players don't listen to their coach and their GM and hear the footprints or the footsteps, they can get in deep doo-doo. They better respect the Hamilton Tiger Cats, because that in itself, as far as I'm concerned, that team and that organization, mm-hmm. Having Austin as a GM, I have all the respect in the world for that guy. He's a winner wherever he goes.
He is. Yep.
So if you don't respect that, you're going to be watching the game on TV, not being a part of playing it. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I call a spade a spade. I'm not here to pussyfoot around here. Oh, sorry. That wasn't a slight at Ticat fans. That wasn't a slight on Ticat fans. That was really something I just felt like saying. That's why I love the CFL, man. The Argos can dominate all year. That doesn't mean they're making it to the Grey Cup. They're going to have to dominate in the Eastern Final. You want to get it to the Grey Cup? Dominate in the Eastern Final. Because it ain't going to happen if you're just dominating during the season. And that's my opinion. Honest, and I'm sorry if you don't like it. Wow. You know, that's the way it is. So in the West, I'm inclined to disagree with you. I think in the same token, if Saskatchewan doesn't respect their opposition, they have two equally fearful opponents in Calgary and BC.
Yeah.
Even if they win the division, Mike, they're going to be in tough with whichever team wins.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, and you know what? It's going to make for great football before the Grey Cup. That Hamilton, if we're both right, and Hamilton and Montreal, Hamilton, what did I just say? Hamilton and Toronto in the Eastern Final. And, whether it be BC or Calgary with Saskatchewan in the Western Final, we're going to have two great games before the Grey Cup. I truly believe that. And that's not a sad thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
If you're a CFL fan first, which I think I am, and I'm an Argo fan second, I think that's great. I think that's great for the game myself. And then, like you said about Ottawa moving in next year, you know, they're going to keep Montreal and Hamilton honest, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Eh?
Yeah, the timing couldn't have been more perfect. I mean, the one thing I'm wondering is, when they come back, does Winnipeg go to the West, or what's up with them? What do they do?
They're going to invent a new division.
Yeah, they're going to have to make a relegation like they have in the Premier League and have to drop them down into the CIS or something.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
God, can you imagine? Wouldn't that be inspiring? I mean,
oh,
if you're a CFL team and you lose and you're the worst team that year and you go into the CIS, trust me, you're going to work as hard as you can not to get there.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, like you said, with the general manager they got in Ottawa, I expect them to be competitive right out the gate. I don't think they're going to struggle for that long.
And the way the draft works, Mike.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The way the draft is working,
mm-hmm.
There's no excuse for them not to be competitive the first year.
Absolutely.
That's going to be the pressure on that GM.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for him not to be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And you
especially
know what?
Considering, go ahead.
Yeah, go. No, you go ahead, please.
No, I was just going to say, when you throw in, they should have, you know, a great home field advantage that first year. And, you know, with the stadium only seats about 22,000 now. I mean, they're going to have a sellout crowd every game. And the atmosphere, you know how it is. You get a great atmosphere, and it can motivate even a bad team to overachieve and play over their heads. So, you know, I just, they have all the things needed to have a great year. So, back to you.
Mike. You know what? Between you and I,
mm-hmm.
when the Sky Dome was built,
yeah,
it helped the Jays a lot because the fans came out to enjoy the stadium.
Yeah.
But not only that, they had to enjoy the team. So as long as you're right, as long as Ottawa does their job and puts together a decent team, It's gonna be hay in the sunshine, baby. It's gonna be good.
Absolutely,
it's gonna be great.
Yeah, I don't know. Have you seen some of the stuff they're doing? Like, have you seen the designs for what they're gonna actually do? Like the whole Lansdowne Park, how they're gonna renovate and change the whole neighborhood.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen it, but I have seen some stuff.
Yeah.
Regardless of what they do, I know the community. I live there, and trust me when I say this. It's not a new community. So, you know, they're going to be reshaping. They're not going to invent anything. They're just going to be reshaping a bunch of existing stuff. Put it this way. For Torontonians that I live near, imagine now the exhibition, because that's what Lansdowne is. It's the exhibition.
Yeah.
Ottawa version. Right?
Right.
So they're going to... they're going to make some changes. And the question is, will those changes be that suitable? I don't know. But I don't think that's going to make an impact. I think the real impact is that you've got a new team in a new stadium. You're sitting in the stands. And you're going to get a chance to be a part of something new. That goes from the water boy right up to the president of the team. This is a new experience. This is fresh, man. It's fresh. There's no negative history. None. None.
Yep.
All you've got a white canvas. You get to paint your own picture, baby. It's all yours. You got nobody else from yesterday impacting on what people think of you today. It's all about what you create today. I mean, what else do you want if you're a franchise? What else do you want if you're a GM? What else do you want if you're a quarterback in the backfield and people don't have anyone to compare you to? Come on. You got it all. This is your chance.
Yeah.
And all they need is Milanovic to write him a speech.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's but speaking of Toronto coaches, would you think there's any chance maybe Jones might be the new coach of Ottawa?
Well, no.
Okay.
And here's why.
Yeah.
He has too big an investment here in Toronto. And he has too much respect here in Toronto. He has the shingle without the responsibility.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good way to put it, yeah.
What else do you want?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't know. You never know, you know? It's like... obviously, he's probably got some history with Marcel, and seeing that they both were in Montreal at the same time back in the day, and I don't know. I think that whatever he does, I think Marcel Desjardins, I can never say the guy's last name for the life of me, but I think he's just going to try to repeat that Montreal model, and I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to reach out. Maybe Marcus Brady might be an option. I think he's going to want to bring that Montreal, you know, Mark Trestman sort of system, if at all possible, to Ottawa.
Mike, I think what you're saying is they will be retracing their steps.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Barker did. Barker went back to Calgary and said, who did I have in Calgary? We won. We did good in Calgary.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't a GM in Ottawa do the same thing?
Yeah, that's true.
Right? I get what you're saying, and you're right. And there's going to be some, you know, where there's a symbiotic relationship that exists and that is mm-hmm. one that you can build on. Why wouldn't you do it?
Absolutely. Right.
That's what you're saying. You're right. You're 100% right. If it works, don't break it. Right?
Yeah. Right.
And, I hear what you're saying. And, again, as an Argo fan, I hope it's not true. I hope it doesn't happen. But, you know what?
I'm sure you wouldn't mind Marcus Brady leaving, right? I don't think that would really matter, would it?
Does it really matter if anybody leaves?
Well, I mean, I think it would matter if Jones left. Yeah, I think that would be a huge loss.
That's
what
I meant.
If Brady leaves, yeah.
At that level.
Oh, yeah.
Now, one of my favorite Argos is Marcus Ball.
Yeah.
And I had a chance to talk to him for under 2 minutes, and this is what he had to say.
You're being counted on. Last year you were a first-year Argo,
uh-huh.
and now you're a second-year Argo, and now you have a chance to impart on a lot of defensive players what it's like to be here in Toronto
right.
and understand the system. You have a year under it. Can you help us to understand how you impart that on your teammates?
Just try to lead by example. Like you said, last year is my first year, so I kind of can relate to a lot of the rookies, you know, more so than a Robert McCune or a Brad, who's been in the league and been with Coach Jones for numerous years. Last year was my first year. I was coming from the bottom up, so I can relate to those guys and tell them exactly what to expect, how to go about doing the things. But, I'm still learning some things also. You know what I mean? It's always a learning process when in Coach Jones' defense. He throws a lot of things at you, and he expects you to get it, so... It's all about learning and making it count.
Now, the three-letter word around here that keeps being repeated is fly. Now, I know you guys are, after winning the Grey Cup, you're nothing but fly. But the big thing that you guys do is you fly around. That seems to be the term that's used around here. Explain that to the novices, what the guys mean when they say that.
Well, we fly around on defense. We make it important to get to the ball, no matter if it's on the other side of the field. We want all 12 hats to the ball because you never know what can happen. Somebody can miss a tackle. Somebody could... not be in their area or somebody could actually make the tackle and the ball could come out. We want to be in control to take the ball, to have first bid at the ball. And by doing that, Coach Jones instills in our head day by day, each meeting, how important it is, your effort to get to the ball.
My man, thank you very much. Real thank pleasure, you. And thank you for the Grey Cup.
Oh, yeah, right on.
Okay.
Well, we're down to... the last 90 seconds in the program. And as usual, I've had the good fortune of having Mike on the program. I've never asked Mike his last name. I'm not going to ask now, but I'm just saying. It's just a point I'm making. Goes to show the level of trust that I have for Mike and his knowledge and my gratitude for the contribution that he makes each and every time he decides to take the time to call the program. Mike, once again, remind us of your blog spot, and we'll close out the show.
Yeah, thank you. Well, it's truecflfan.blogspot.com. And, Frank, I just wanted to thank you, too. I know that, you know, you sacrificed time, and, you know, you're a busy man with a family, and I just really appreciate that, you know, you made this great show and you give a platform for other CFL fans to be on it, and I know it's a tremendous sacrifice on your part, but I just want to let you know I really appreciate that. And, you know, I've got several people now that are starting to tune into your show, and they think it's great. And I just think what you're doing is a really great thing for the CFL and for us all CFL fans.
You're way too frickin' kind. I have fun doing what I'm doing, and it gives me the opportunity to be with you and people like you. Thank you to everyone who was on the show today, Aaron McIntosh. This has been Candid Frank Live on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in.